At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. To the Indo-Pacific, to the Oceania part of the Indo-Pacific, the island chains and atolls that make up the peoples of the Pacific, but at the same time, an important part of the puzzle ahead of us. Should there be an armed conflict in the Pacific between the People's Republic of China and the rest of the planet? I welcome Cleo Pascal of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies and Colonel Grant Newsham, United States Marine Corps retired, to help me understand a story that at first seems logical, how the U.S. is carefully constructing a defensive obstacles to China's predation, but at the same time, a puzzle as to why more is not being done. What is the problem Congress is having with the defense of the Pacific, in particular Hawaii? Cleo, wonderful to welcome you back. I begin by asking the question of the Republic of the Marshall Islands, Palau, and Micronesia. Those three island groupings are critical to the defense of Hawaii. How so?
So this goes back to Japan. If you can remember the battle map during World War II, that whole section of the Central Pacific was actually under Japanese control for 30 years, from the middle of World War I until the end of World War II. That massive stretch meant that Japan could come right up close to Hawaii. After World War II, the U.S., it was a bit long and complicated, but in the end, the three countries went independent but signed a very unique defense and security deal with the U.S. that gave the U.S. Strategic denial, which means that they can block other countries from operating there militarily, and they can also have almost unimpeded access to the land, sea, and air in that in those three locations, which means that the U.S. can push its defense perimeter all the way out west. Palau, which is on the western part, its waters actually touch the Philippines waters, and it goes right up to Guam. So it creates this zone of security in the Central Pacific that has underpinned U.S. defense architecture in the entire Indo-Pacific for decades.
Colonel, a very good evening to you. Thank you very much. It's called Operation Flintlock, I learned from your presentation with Cleo. Operation Flintlock was an operation for the Marine Corps in 43 and 44 to recapture the Marshall Islands, especially the Kwajalein Atoll, and other parts of the battles ranging from Tarawa all the way to Majuro. Your experience in the Marine Corps is very helpful here, because this would be the crowning moment when the people of the Marshall Islands and these other islands believed that they were in some fashion connected intimately with the United States of America, because the Marine Corps had liberated them from the brutality of the Japanese. Is this taught in the Marines? When you joined, did they talk about your successes in the Pacific, Colonel? Good evening to you.
Well, good evening. Well, very much. This is really the part of the Marine Corps' culture, and it is really where the Marine Corps made a name for itself, was in that island-hopping campaign of the Pacific. And island-hopping makes it sound a little sort of like a schoolyard sort of a game, but actually what it meant was to retake or to take these islands, often just atolls. And this was bloody hard work that cost a lot of lives. And the Marshall Islands and Kwajalein had some of that fighting. And despite just massive preparatory bombardments, it took Marines to go in on the ground and take these places. And this is really something that's hard to overstate. I think it's often lost in memory these days. but these were just ferocious battles, and all sorts of Marines, Americans got killed, and almost all the Japanese defenders died in place. And that really set the stage for the last 75 years we've had. It created a certain relationship with the local people out there that tied them to us. But this is really history that can't be overstated, and it needs to be remembered.
They are generally understood as the Gilbert and Marshall Islands from 42 through 44. It was a series of battles around them. The casualty numbers are numbing compared to where we think what we think today. 5,100 killed or missing on the U.S. side, 6,700 wounded out of a Marine Corps that was a very small and early demonstration of U.S. success. However, we come to the 21st century. And Cleo, I come to this because of your teaching that the People's Republic of China has two agents, linked agents, operating before and after in the RMI, in the Marshall Islands. Who are they? What are their names, and what is their ambition?
So we can't say overtly that they're agents of the PRC, but here are some data points that might be helpful to think whether or not they are doing things that would be helpful to Beijing. These are two individuals who essentially bought Marshall Island citizenship, and then through an NGO that they also bought that was affiliated to the UN, set up a scheme where they started buying influence and paying off, and this you can say with legal certainty, bribing members of the Marshall Islands government in order to set up a country within a country. They wanted to take an atoll, Rongelap Atoll, and change its immigration procedures, its customs procedures, and put in who knows what in this place. And remember, this is not that far from Kwajalein, where the U.S. still has an incredibly important a base, which is where you do missile testing. So you launch missiles from California, and they fly all the way over to the test sites in Marshalls, in Kwajalein, where they can be, where that technology can be honed and made more precise. Extremely important site. Also, Marshall Islands recognizes Taiwan. So these two bought Marshall Islands citizenship and then bought up almost half of the Marshall Islands legislature and came within one vote of managing to create their country within a country. They almost brought down the government. The U.S. Government eventually got involved, and they could because this NGO was run out of New York. So they were extradited, brought to New York, put on, well, charges were laid, and then they pled guilty just to one count each. So the Justice Department, instead of putting them on trial so all the evidence could come out, so we could find out who was being bought off on the Marshall Islands side, so we could get more detail about how this whole thing operated, just let them plead guilty on very small charges. None of the information came out. The Marshall Islands Attorney General didn't have the information he needed to prosecute the Marshallese who had been bought off. And then you end up with this crazy situation now where one of them finished her time, serving her time, and has been deported by the United States back to the Marshall Islands without any case file. So she's walking around free to re-bribe, if she wanted, the people who she bribed already.
Colonel, I come to you because the Marshall Islands are part of this chain from the Philippines to Hawaii. And in the event that the People's Republic of China or its agents have sway in the Marshall Islands, what does that mean for the defense of Guam, of the North Pacific, of Hawaii? Can you look at a map and see, as the Defense Department would see, this circumstance?
Oh, they hopefully understand the problem. It make it very difficult to move forces, move supplies into the Western Pacific to that so-called first island chain just off the Chinese coast. It'd be very hard to defend Taiwan, the Philippines, or even Japan or South Korea. So look at it as having both two functions. One is blocking movement westward, but also you've effectively would have the enemy in your rear, and which is the Central Pacific, and try defending a line when you have the enemy in your rear. And that is impossible to do, or at least not without great cost. And this is something that it's finally being recognized, but it's only been in recent years that the military has actually figured this out. But one does note that the military could get its act together, get things just right in the Central Pacific, and still lose. By virtue of the subversion, the political warfare which the Chinese are operating, and which this incident that Cleo has described demonstrates, it's just one manifestation of what the Chinese are doing all over the place.
Grant Newsham is a retired U.S. Marine colonel, author of the very helpful book on these matters, When China Attacks. Cleo Pascal is senior fellow of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, a columnist with the Sunday Guardian. When we come back, what is to be done? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Chances are you've been to the doctor recently and you probably handed over your insurance, your ID, and even your social security number. Your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal info. And if any of them accidentally expose your details, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.